Good evening, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, the host of the daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, and this is another Saturday Night Special episode. Saturday Night Specials come your way when I have something to share with you that is not a regularly scheduled episode of the show. I always schedule them to drop at 6:59 p.m., which is 18:59 in military time, 18:59 having been a very special year in the old Oregon Territory. I usually post them early, though, so that I don't forget. This particular Saturday Night Special is a recording of a radio appearance on The Wake Up Call with Bill London and Gary Snyder on KPNW Radio, 1150 AM and 93.7 FM, broadcasting out of Eugene. KPNW has been kind enough to give me permission to rebroadcast it on my podcast, so I am doing so today. By the way, I'm kind of a regular on The Wake Up Call. I'm on the air with Bill and Gary once a month, usually the first Friday of the month unless it lands on a holiday, in which case it becomes the second Friday of the month, at 6:30 a.m. So if you're a sufficiently early bird and are around Central Lane County, tune in and check it out. If not, you can always catch me on the stream, which you access by going to kpnw.com and clicking the red Listen Now button at the top right. This particular episode aired August 7th of last year, and the topic was James Lotan, the minor political hack who became the opium king of the West Coast for a couple of years. Here it comes.
The Wake Up Call on News Radio 1120 KPNW.
Quiet, please. Get ready.
Get so terribly happy to have all of you with us right now.
Look who's here.
Good morning.
Good morning. It is none other than the famous Finn John.
Famous for what?
But yeah, hey. You're famous for a variety of things.
Yeah. Just ask my wife.
Yes, just ask your wife. Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's always angry because people are stopping him and getting autographs and having selfies taken with him and stuff. In
those
restaurants.
Are called warrants and mug shots.
Yeah, okay. Got it. Anyway, he is the creator of the website offbeatoregon.com. He's been doing it for years, newspaper columnist. And he's also a published author because he writes books like this one right here.
Oh, yeah. Bad Ideas and Horrible
Bad
People.
Ideas and Horrible People of Old Oregon, which I'm holding in my hands, as you could see if you were sitting here in this studio.
Woohoo!
But you can't. But listen, you can hear me go. That's me closing the book. That's a hardback, by the way. It's not some stupid little paperback. Anyway, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Thanks, Gary. Good to be here.
Good to see you again. It's been a while.
Yeah. Anyway, was the drive up from or down from Corvallis pleasant this morning?
It was pretty uneventful. Yeah, it's always nice getting out this early in the morning because the traffic lights are my humble servants instead of my malevolent overlords, and there's hardly anybody else on the road. So,
I understand that, by the way. I understand that completely. So what story of Offbeat Oregon are you going to present for us this morning?
All right. So I have been digging back into the story of the Blum Dunbar gang, which was in 1893 in Portland, went down in history as the most important and influential and historically significant drug smuggling and human trafficking gang in history, bar none. Just they're at the top. But of course you can't smuggle 10 tons of opium and tens of thousands of illegal immigrants into a major port city like Portland, even in 1893, without a little help from some highly placed friends. And so I wanted to dig into a particular Oregon politician named James Lotan. Now, you know, government corruption gets a bad rap.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes government corruption can lead to good outcomes. Well, I mean, good-ish outcomes. like the attack on Pearl Harbor and World War II. Well, okay, so those weren't really good outcomes. But it was a good thing that the United States got into that conflict when it did, instead of waiting a couple years until, you know, the Germans had knocked England out of the fight or something like that. And that actually probably wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for a particular political hack named James Lotan, who in 1893 was when he was arrested for it, but he had gotten this plum political job as the customs collector for the Port of Portland. And the cool thing about this was that, and it was because he'd networked his way to the top of the Oregon Republican Party. At this time, the Republican Party basically ran Oregon, and there were two factions of it. So instead of Democrats and Republicans, you had silver Republicans and gold Republicans. And he was he started out as a silver guy, and then he switched to gold. But anyway, he risen to the top of the Oregon Republican Party. He was the president of the Republican Party, and he had been given this political plum as customs collector for the Port of Portland.
Okay.
And the customs collector is the top guy in customs, making sure that no one is smuggling tons of drugs and thousands of illegal immigrants into the port. So naturally, that put him in a great position to smuggle
do all
tons
of those
of
things.
Drugs. And yeah, if anybody was going to be able to do it, it's going to be him. So he partnered up with his friend, who his recently widowed friend, William Dunbar. And William Dunbar was part owner of the Merchant Steamship Company. I've talked about this, about Dunbar, before. The Merchant Steamship Company had two steamships, and Dunbar owned a flour mill, and he had opened up a line of trade with China and used his steamships to bring Oregon wheat and flour to China and bring the ships back in ballast. Well, Dunbar was Scottish, and stereotypically Scots don't like stuff like bringing ships back all the way across the ocean with nothing but rocks in the hold. So he's like, what could I do with my ships that are coming back? And along comes Jim Lotan and said, I've got an idea. And next thing you know, they're bringing back Chinese workers in these empty ships. They all paid something like $150, which was rather a largish wad in 1893, for the privilege of being smuggled into the country and into the Port of Portland with the help of, you know, James Lotan. And so they got that going, and it was a pretty good scam, actually, because you have to understand, at this time, no one really cared if you were smuggling workers into the country. They were from China, of course. This was the Chinese gangs of workers on the railroad and stuff like that. It was those guys, and they would get into the country, and they would work on the railroads, and they were illegal immigrants, but nobody really cared because it was a big country. There was lots of work to do. It wasn't a recession or anything like that. So they could have done that for a good long time. Unfortunately, Dunbar's partner, Nat Blum, decided it would also be really cool to put some opium on the ships and bring that in as well. The problem with opium, you might think drug smuggling is a bad thing, as do I.
I might classify that as not positive, but okay.
But it was a little bit, it wasn't really a case of bringing an illegal substance into the country. It was a case of stealing tax money from the government, because opium was legal, but it was taxed at $12 a pound. So $12 in 1893,
that's a lot of money.
And, a pound of opium, I mean, they brought 5, 6, 7, 8 tons of opium into the port. So
that
basically represented stealing a lot of money from the government. And the government has a tendency to take that a little bit more seriously. So when they got into the drug smuggling thing, that was kind of when they sealed their fate. But so they did get busted. But before they got busted, Dunbar, and I have talked about this before, but it's worth going back to because this is why this is all so significant. Dunbar adopted a stepson, kind of like Haji on Johnny Quest, too, as a partner for his young not orphaned.
Is this the same son that became like the Japanese ambassador that
that signed up Japan with the Axis powers, because he thought he knew what America was like, because he had basically been adopted into the Corleone family and held around with those guys and all the, you know, the waterfront wastrels and the bent business people and the corrupt politicians and stuff. And he's like, what a country. It's crazy. But I mean, if he hadn't had that impression that he knew Americans because he knew this gang of organized criminals in the Portland waterfront, he wouldn't, because he thought that, you know, or America was a country of, you know, of bluff, straightforward crooks who appreciate strength and respect resolve. And, you know, he wasn't
wrong.
Completely wrong, but it was a case of degrees. And so that was the miscalculation that led him to say, well, you know, if Japan and Nazi Germany are lined up together, that will have the strength that the Americans will be like, oh, well, I have to take you seriously now. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. But what did we get out of that? Well, we got into World War II. We got rid of the Nazis. Japan basically became a tripwire that could be tugged on to bring America into the war against Nazi Germany in time. And whether that was done deliberately or incidentally is, you know, it did happen. That was how we got in. And, of course, we also got a live fire demonstration. This is very cold to say, but I'm convinced that the world would have ended in 1961 if it hadn't happened. We got a live fire demonstration of what it looks like when you blow up a nuclear weapon in a population center. And every world leader or warlord got to see that with their own eyes before they were put in a position where they could unleash it. So, yeah, not a bad record for, you know, a corrupt government official and a gang of you know, bad drug and human trafficking smugglers.
So the kind of the unintended consequences, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's interesting. You know, it always interests me how one event will lead the butterfly effect.
Yeah,
I think is the proper terminology for it. It's the butterfly effect. Something happens 50, 60, 40 years, and then because of it, it winnows down and becomes some major thing that you would think is totally unconnected to essentially drug smuggling out of the Port of Portland.
You're right.
You know, the Port of Portland saved us from nuclear war because they smuggled drugs.
You know, so parents, if little Junior is going bad, there's still hope.
He could save the world through his illegal activities. That's a good way to look at it, I guess. Take a little consolation in that.
Yeah. Right. And when you tell that kid that they'll never amount to anything, well, you might be wrong. You might also be right. But you know,
and you may not live long to see the fruits of their labor.
There is that. Yeah. So that's what I've been digging into just recently. I went into this pretty deeply a couple of years ago, but it is my favorite Oregon story. I still remember how I felt when I was looking up Matsoka's information and recognized William Dunbar's name. I was like, no, it can't be. It's weird, these coincidences that'll pop up, but I would love to make a movie of this story from the perspective of William Dunbar. The freshly widowed guy getting a phone call from his well-connected friend. Hey, would you like to go into a life of crime with me?
And make some money?
Yeah, let's make a bunch of money.
Yeah, okay.
You've got the ships. I've got the brains. Let's make lots of money. Yeah, okay. I can't believe I just sang.
And I'm
going to
adopt a Japanese kid who's later going to change the world.
Yeah.
That is... Man, that is insane. How many tons of opium did they smuggle?
Well, you know, criminals aren't really known for keeping good records unless they're Nazis. But at least 5 tons. They had about 3.5 tons seized, because courts do keep good records.
Yeah. So what ended up happening? I mean, they obviously got caught. How long did Dunbar go to jail?
Oh, well, actually, Dunbar ran. He ran to China, and basically Woodrow Wilson pardoned him many years later for some reason. But anyway, so he ran. Nat Blum, who was Dunbar's partner, who basically was his idea to do the opium. And he and James Lotan and a bunch of other people were arrested and prosecuted. But the trial ended with a hung jury because James Lotan, remember, he's the president of the Oregon Republican Party. He's a member of the Arlington Club. He has lots of friends and influence in high places. One of those friends was the jury foreman. So he didn't have a whole lot to worry about.
Apparently the DA didn't do his voir dire as thoroughly as he should have.
I suspect the DA was also a member of Portland's elite and was, the list of people involved with this thing reads like an Arlington Club directory. It was really.
When you say the Arlington Club, what is that?
The Arlington Club. Okay, the Arlington Club was the Arlington Club was like a social club in Portland for business elites. It was an invitation only kind of thing. People like William Ladd, Henry Failing,
Ladd and Bush.
Yeah, people really high rolling. Important, very important people from the Oregon business and political elite were members of the Arlington Club. And I'm sure a lot of business got done there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, everybody got by with a little help from their friends, I guess.
I wonder whatever happened to the Arlington Club.
I imagine it's still around, but it hasn't occurred to me to look into that. I don't know why they would have closed it.
Yeah, considering, smuggler, drugglers and human traffickers, that's not going to slow us down.
Yeah.
A little graft, a little corruption. Ah,
it might have.
That'll keep us going.
Yeah, I have a vague sense that it may have something to do with the Multnomah Athletic Club now, but that's probably not true.
Oh, that's where you go for your drug smuggling and human trafficking now, the Multnomah Athletic Club.
Well, they were mostly interested in making sure that their friend didn't get in trouble.
I
don't think they would have endorsed such activities, but. Yeah.
Offbeatoregon.com. You can read the archives of the research and stories of Oregon and all of its crazy stuff collated by our friend over here, Finn John. Finn, thanks for coming back into the studio. Always great to have you in.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Gary. Have a great day.
It is the wake up call. Good morning. Beautiful start to the day. 7 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about IP-17 from a business leader on KPNW.
That wraps up another Offbeat Oregon History Saturday Night Special. Thanks again for tuning in. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. You've been listening to a recording of a radio appearance on KPNW Radio's Wake Up Call with London and Snyder Morning Show. You can find more details about the story I was talking with the boys about by going to offbeatoregon.com, clicking the blue directory button at the top right, and searching for it by hashtag keyword. A search for James Lotan will bring you right to it. Or you can scroll down until you get to the publication date, which was August 4th, 2024. We're also members of a community of Oregon creators called the Oregon Voices Network, which you can find at oregonvoices.net. It's a hub page that links to Marcus Axford's Welcome to Oregon podcast and the weekly Influential Oregonian interview podcast that Marcus MCs with me and archaeologist David Winkler and usually a special guest, plus some other cool stuff like Discord servers and a Facebook page. So yeah, check it out. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Regular episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before your Monday morning commute. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the weekend, what little we have left, with good stuff. Bye now.